This is it. This is the Business Greenhouse podcast. If you're a business owner looking to grow a company that thrives, then you're in the right place. I'm Emmy Faust, and you can get more details about this episode and full show notes at my website, emmyfaust.com. Today I'm chatting to Matt Duggan, who is a bit of a digital superstar, and we're going to be talking about digital trends in 2020. So do listen to the end. There are five trends which are really interesting, and I hope that you find it informative. So Matt, thank you so much for coming on the Business Greenhouse. Something that I wanted to rack your brains, that is the right expression, isn't it?
It is, yes. Yes, indeed.
Rack your brains away. We're coming to the end of 2019, 2020, all the excitements of a new year. And obviously, you know, there's uncertainty in the economy and people probably just want a good idea of what's going to happen in business and what's going to happen in digital. And I wondered if you've got any insights that you can share with me and the listeners about what we can expect from the trends and the opportunities that are going to, you know, pop up from the digital sector.
Yeah, sure. I shall get my crystal ball and tell you exactly what's going to happen. If only I could. I can't necessarily tell you exactly what's going to happen next year. I would love to have that level of certainty, but I can't. First of all, thank you, by the way, having me back. It's really nice to be here. I'm going for my hat trick, by the way, listeners. I'm going to see if I can get one three times, but I'm just not really telling me that yet.
You'll have to come up with a really, really good
Yeah, I know.
Topic.
It's got to be really good. That's the thing, right?
Yeah, you'll have to pitch it to me and see it.
I'll get a presentation together. I'll get slides. It'll be a whole thing. Anyway, the whole point of this, right, is that there are probably four or five things I want to cover today in a fair bit of detail that I think are going to be really important over the course of the next year and a bit and further going forwards, not even through just 2020, but ongoing. The biggest thing, I think, is the need for a sort of more science-based type of marketing. Now, I don't necessarily mean that we will have to go into a laboratory and, you know, start conducting experiments on things. What I'm talking about is understanding the analytics behind your business. And there are still so many people. And by the way, I can already hear some of the listeners going, hold on a minute, that's not a new thing. No, you're right. It's not a new thing. And that's kind of the point. It's becoming more and more easy now to use really good, sort of solid scientific advertising. And by scientific, I simply mean you have a hypothesis. This is how science works, right? You have a hypothesis. You then conduct an experiment to test that hypothesis. You have the results and you see if they work and if they support that hypothesis or if they disprove it. And then you go back and you try and prove that same principle again, or other people go and try and prove that same principle again. It's what's known as peer-reviewed science, right? If you have that ability to do that in marketing, and you do, right, let's be really clear, you do have that ability in marketing, then you should be making use of that. And all that means is actually going into your Google Analytics account and learning how to read it, right? Because most of it, if you've got analytics hooked up to your website, which you should have, ideally if it's hooked up to wherever it is that you do the payment processing for your business, if you've got an online business, or you have some way to reference how much money you're making as a result of what's going on your website, as long as you have all that hooked up, you'll get a really clear idea about exactly what's working and what isn't. And then the great thing is you can go and do more of the stuff that works and less of the stuff that doesn't, right? So that's one side of the scientific advertising thing. You just want to make sure that you are really clear on your own data. First of all, does that make sense?
It does make sense, but that makes sense to me because kind of like I love data and numbers and, you know, I even find Google Analytics confusing sometimes. I mean, I can go in and I could go in and get some, you know, basic data. And I've done, I remember when I was at one of the businesses I was consulting for, I did an intermediate or maybe advanced Google Analytics training for a whole afternoon. And I was kind of like totally lost. And I was like, I've done economics, accounting and law at uni and I've done math and I don't get it. So, you know,
you're overqualified and you still didn't get it.
And I still didn't get it. So maybe I just was having a bad day or...
No, that's a really fair thing to say, right? I really get it. And sorry jumping in, but I really get what you're saying because... Yes, when you go in and look at it, it is overwhelming and it's difficult and it's too much data, right? There's too much stuff going on. The fact is, you don't really need to know a ton of stuff if you've got it hooked up properly. And that's probably the hardest part, right?
As long as someone else can help. So I was just going to say, someone else could help you get everything set up, couldn't they?
Absolutely. Yeah, you've got, so if you go onto upwork.com, there are people on there who are experts in Google Analytics, as well as outsourcers for tons of other stuff. I've hired a lot of people on there over the years, as has my business partner in another business years ago, to the point they actually interviewed him in the Financial Times because they were trying to understand this sort of new gig economy as it was emerging, I don't know, 10 years ago or so. Anyway, the fact is that you've got the ability to get this data, but it can be overwhelming. All you need to do is get an expert to set it up properly for you. Get them to work with you over the course of a day or two. Usually won't take that long. And make sure that everything is hooked up to tell you the right information. Okay. Once you have that, they can actually build you a dashboard or as what's called a view inside Analytics. And that view will allow you to just go and log in and immediately see, oh, we made this much money from social media this month. Done. That's it. Amazing. That's as hard as that needs to be. But it is made complicated by the fact that people know they should have analytics. They don't really know why they should have it because they never read it. So it's pointless having it really. But they know they have, because people like me have told them they should get it. But then there's no extra step of, but here's what you need next. So you could create a view for your social media, create a view for your paid advertising, create a view for any PR stuff that you do if you're using, you know, tracking for that. All of that could be tracked through Google Analytics. If you have that, you will very quickly be able to make really intelligent decisions. And this, I'm on a bit of a crusade about this at the moment, as you can probably tell from my ranting on this podcast episode so far. And if you're watching the video version, me waving my hands about like a crazy person. The fact is that if you've got this data, you will make better decisions in your business, which means business gets easier for you, which means growing the business gets easier, which means you don't waste money. And you also don't have conversations with your agency. And I literally had this conversation earlier this week with a client where they were kind of, I actually had to stop them and say, look, you're still having these sort of slightly vague hypothetical situations. And I know I said you need a hypothesis at the beginning, but you need to get past the hypothesis to the data. They were still stuck on hypothesis. Why? Because their analytics wasn't set up properly to track how much money they were making from their social media activity. So I was saying, look, this is the priority. I don't care what other offers, what other amazing stuff you've got going on in your business. I don't care about any of that. And neither should you, because you don't know the basic numbers of your business.
You've got to measure everything. Measuring, you know, that's another thing that I say to my clients, measuring is so important. And you can get, you know, you can use Google Analytics tracking, can't you, to track all your activity. Yeah. I believe that for a lot of people, including myself sometimes, it is overwhelming. And if you don't have it set up properly from the beginning, it's kind of pointless. So that's the takeaway, isn't it, to you?
Well, it is, but you can save it. So that's, I don't want people who are listening to this who've had analytics for 5 years, who are gathering the data but never looking at it. I don't want them to think, oh, well, I didn't set it up the right way first time, so screw it, I won't bother. It's important that you can resurrect that. And actually, if you've got all the data there, it's even
amazing.
Easier. Yeah, perfect. But you just have, what you have now is a bucket full of raw data that you don't know how to wade through. And you need someone who can set up the right things in your business to say, actually, this is the bit of the data that matters that's going to help you to make more decisions. So you might find, for example, that those links that you're posting in your Facebook group are actually the driver of a lot of your revenue, or the PR that you're doing. You know, that thing that you had, a half page advert in some newspaper. I mean, not that newspaper ads should be encouraged in the modern day because people aren't really looking at them.
Yeah.
They don't work. But, you know, whatever it is that you're doing, rightly or wrongly, whatever it is you're doing, you should be tracking it to know that that newspaper ad didn't work and you'd better off spending it on Facebook ads. It's almost like I'm biased. So the fact is that that's something you should be focusing on the whole time, to understand what the data is in your business, and then just look at it once a week and make decisions based upon that data. So while it's not necessarily a complete 2020 only trend, the science side of things is helping marketing a lot. And those numbers and the maths around it are much more readily available than they've ever been. It's way easier to do than it's ever been. And that's something you should all be focusing on.
And it's free. Google Analytics is free.
Yeah, most of those things are free. And even other things that are more, again, scientific, like, for example, using custom audiences. We talked very briefly about this in the last episode. And, you know, that's something, again, which is quite scientific. You can upload a list of your best performing clients, or, well, all of your clients, by lifetime value. And then Facebook will go and it will find more people like those who are the best performing or most the highest lifetime value customers in your business. that's amazing. That's never been available before because of the sheer amount of data that Facebook has gathered on all of its users. Again, whether or not you agree with that and you think we're in some Orwellian nightmare, we definitely are, by the way. But whether or not you think we are or not, that's something which is there for you to use as a business owner. You should be taking advantage of it.
Data, yeah.
Yeah, the data, it's there.
It is there. So that's a big ongoing trend that's going to get more important.
Yeah, for sure. That's a big one. There's also another one which I noticed in a report from the, now let's get this right, it was the Economist Intelligence Unit. Check me out with my references.
We'll put that in the show notes.
Yeah, we'll put a link to it, which is a report which they brought out. So the Economist magazine, for those international listeners, you may not necessarily have seen it or heard it, but the Economist is a very well-respected, again, economics-focused type of publication in the UK, although it also talks about lots of other things, you know, global trends, that sort of stuff. And it has this thing called the Intelligence Unit, which is a group of super nerdy people who go and find out, they probably won't thank me for saying that, but, you know, hey, sorry guys if you're listening. But the idea is that those are people who are going out into the world, looking at the data that's out there and trying to interpret it, understand it, talk to the people who matter in those industries, and then gauge an idea as to, you know, how they're going to go about 2020. So in this particular case, they created one to do with marketing, and they said that 63% of all the kind of CMOs, so chief marketing officers of companies, are focusing as their main and sole kind of big priority in 2020 on social media. So that all these people who are saying, oh, social media feels like it's a bit old, or social media is dead, or because there's always going to be those people, like people who say SEO is dead, and they've been saying it for the last 10 years. Turns out it's not. It's still very much alive. But
I got a new client from SEO just the other day.
Right, exactly. So. So sort of proves my point. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So those people who are kind of looking into social media, you can clearly see that it's important people in the marketing world. Now, the fact that it's that larger number, 63% of CMOs who are surveyed in this are all putting their main focus on social media, that should tell you something. It tells you that we're not at all saturated yet in the social media landscape, and that there is a massive opportunity, especially through advertising, and this goes back to the scientific side of things. There is a way for you to create campaigns, drive people to your site, work out how many people converted to whatever offer it was that you put in front of them, work out how many people actually landed on the page versus clicked the ad. There are tons of things here that you can do that will help you to tighten all the bolts in your business to make it run more efficiently. You know, it's like if you had an engine in a car that had lots of little bits missing. The engine would still run, but it wouldn't be anywhere near as efficient as if you put all the other bits on it. That's essentially what all that scientific stuff that I talked about earlier helps you to do. It means that it runs much more smoothly, more cleanly, gets you from A to B much quicker. It's exactly the same with your marketing. You know, get an idea of that. And when it comes to the social media stuff, get good at understanding just once a week or once every couple of weeks or once a month, even if you're really pressed for time. What's working right now in social media world? You can watch videos from the likes of Social Media Examiner. You can watch, they've got a YouTube channel. You can look at Google Webmasters for the Google side of things. They also talk a bit about YouTube. There are tons of places that you can find this data. You know, I do videos on YouTube. You know, this podcast is a great way for you to find out more stuff. Like, just make sure you're informing yourself on a weekly basis or at least monthly.
Or using an agency that's kind of telling you.
Yeah, using an agency who've got their finger on the pulse.
Or a freelancer. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
So were they talking about, I mean, the thing about social media is it's kind of covering a lot of different platforms, isn't it?
True.
A lot of different, so you've got YouTube and Pinterest, which is evergreen content, some of it video, then you've got LinkedIn, you know. Were they talking about any particular channels or any particular type of content, or is it just that big?
Well, it's the,
you know,
it's,
social media is a chunk.
Yeah, it's a really good question. I think what's interesting is that they said, I'm just reading from this, it's actually an article about that whole report. It said, considering this CMO's report, that they will focus on interactive channels. So it's actually the interactivity of social media. And so it's aspects of social media that are more interactive. So not just the comment section, which is a place for you to interact with your clients. And again, this is, it blows my mind, the number of people who do social media right now who don't respond to people who comment on their stuff. What, like, I no words. I don't know what to say to that. It's just like, if I came up to you in a bar, or if we were talking and you come, let's say you came and saw me speak on stage, and you came up to me afterwards and you said, Matt, I really enjoyed that. Thanks very much. I've just got a quick question. and I looked at you and then just walked off. What would that create as an impression?
You are so rude.
I know, right? It's ridiculous, right? It was so rude. And yet, we do that all the time on social media. Now, if you're a massive celebrity and you get added on Twitter 50 million times a day, and half of it's abusive stuff from trolls over Brexit, even though you didn't ever talk about Brexit, because that's just what they do. And, you know, the other half is stuff about whatever it is that you are talking about currently on your Twitter feed. I get why you wouldn't respond to every single person, but most businesses are not major celebrities. In fact, most businesses who are big enough to be major celebrities actually have a department dedicated to monitoring their social media and keeping an eye on it. Why? Because it's a great place for actual customer interaction.
Yeah.
Like Dell have set up their own, so the computer company Dell actually set up a Dell support Twitter years ago in order to field support questions.
Such a great idea.
It's fantastic. Yeah, really good. You know, people like Zappos, I've talked about Zappos a lot, but not on this podcast, but in other places. And Zappos are a really good example of great customer service. Again, they're doing some great stuff on social media to really not just engage people, but answer their questions or field complaints. You know, actually Wendy's, who's a brand in the States, it's a burger chain in the States, have actually made a marketing thing like a campaign out of responding to comments that people make. They will actually kind of retweet something abusive or whatever that someone said, and they'll write something really funny back. Like, I don't know if they've hired a comedy writer, but they're really funny. Yeah. Now, that's a high stakes thing to do, but as a result, really got them noticed. So social media is such a huge chance to interact. You know, even Messenger, people are not using Messenger anywhere near as much as they could be. And yet all their customers are using it. You know, like I could message...
Yeah, that's a really good point. I know I don't really use Facebook a huge amount, but you've messaged me with details about an event that you've got coming up.
Right.
And then actually I then booked it because I don't normally get.
It's mad, isn't it? It's almost like I know what I'm talking about. It's like, it's something that people are using all the time. You've got, how many of you right now listening have got, if you're driving, don't go and check immediately, right? Keep your eyes on the road, behave yourselves. But if you are with your phone right now and you're listening to this on your phone via whatever it is you're listening to this podcast on, have you got Messenger on your phone? There's a really good chance if you've ever used Facebook, you also have Messenger on your phone. Now, Messenger gets open rates when you send messages to your clients through it. That will get up to 90% open rates. You can't get that on email. I don't care how good at email you are, you won't get a 90% open rate on a standard message that you send out to people. Now, it is getting harder to do this, right? But it doesn't mean that you still can't get amazing open rates and, more importantly, really good click-through rates, like I'm talking 30, 40, 50% click-through rates on stuff that you send out via ManyChat or Messenger. And ManyChat, by the way, is a really good system to use for gathering a list of people who subscribe to you rather than via email. They do it via Messenger. So ManyChat.com, I've got no affiliation with them, but I use them a lot for all of our clients. And we run marketing through ManyChat, which allows us to put marketing through Messenger, which again allows us to interact with people. And I really think this is a big trend next year, is that it'll be much more personal. It's already going that way now. Marketing is no longer a big broadcasty, shouty, get a megaphone, stand on the street corner and go, "We're brilliant, come and buy from us." No one's doing that anymore. And the reason they're not doing it is because no one's listening to the mad person with the megaphone on the street corner. They won't have a conversation with someone who can either help them or who's heard about someone who can help them. And it all goes through that sort of, those whispers that happen, you know, through your network, and understanding that that's where your business will come from. You know, I'm not saying marketing doesn't work. I'm not saying that advertising doesn't work. I'm saying that that is advertising and marketing in 2020 and beyond, is that you can actually target much smaller audiences with much more specific messages and really help them and interact and engage with them and answer their questions and educate them and entertain them. That's what's going to bring people into your world and make it way easier to sell to them than if you were to just be out there with all the other idiots who are just shouting at an audience in the hope that they'll buy something.
I think it's about human connection. That's a really big thing. And,
For sure. You
know, I listened to this fantastic podcast about that and written a blog post as well. But, you know, we get spammed. We get so much stuff out there where no one's actually kind of putting themselves in their customer's shoes and talking to them in their language and really just kind of trying to have a much more bespoke or one-on-one conversation.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, That is that. So social media is going to be big. So
yeah, which doesn't sound, let's clarify that, doesn't sound like a prediction if we say it like that, because otherwise people are going to go, hang on, this is a podcast in 2019.
This guy's really good.
Yeah, who's this idiot? Yeah, but yeah, it's going to be big. Yeah, Tumblr's going to be massive. So like, no, that's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it's the interactivity of social media that's going to be much bigger, and the more personalized side of social media will become more important, not just the big broadcasty shouty stuff.
And also that, interestingly, that is what a lot of the, you know, marketing directors and businesses are going to be focusing their time and energy on that in 2020.
Yeah exactly.
So hopefully we'll see some cool stuff coming out.
Yeah.
Any more trends, or is that your trend?
I've got loads, but I'm not going to, that's it. No, that's it. Yeah, social media is going to be big. Bye! No, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to leave it there. Because I'm actually going to talk about something else which is related to that last point, which is making less noise and going deeper with the content that you create. So we're noticing now more and more the stuff that ranks on page one of Google, for example, for an information-based search. And I'm going to come back to those in a minute because there's something really important happening with those. But when you have a piece of content out there, if you're going to want to rank it on page one of Google, and let's be honest, that's where you should be. It's the old joke, where's the best place to bury a dead body? The second page of Google, because no one ever looks there, right? Yeah. I love that you laughed, because no one else would laugh at that joke. It's terrible, Emmy. But everyone else listening is going, yeah, I've heard it all before, or no, that's rubbish. But God bless you for humouring me. So the fact is that with the content, you need to create really in-depth content, the stuff that works. Do you know what's a really good idea for most businesses is a definitive guide to whatever it is you do. So we're currently doing this in our business. We're writing a few of these because we've noticed over the years that like the complete guide to, or the definitive guide to whatever it is, they do really well on search. They do really well in Google. Mm. The reason they do so well is because they are really in depth. They're exactly what people need. It absolutely hits all the buttons that Google are trying to hit, which is great user experience, really good content, in-depth. It talks about a very specific topic, not just a broad covering of everything. So the more you can really sort of punch through the search results with a really great piece of content, the better. And the only way to do that is to go deep into your topic and really drill down. So rather than trying to go, you know, meters wide, try and go meters deep with this content instead, and be in a very specific area of your business and a very specific area of your niche. So I could be talking about this whole interaction thing on social media, and within that I could talk about Messenger. So I'm only really talking about Messenger in a piece, and as a result I can go really deep on that particular topic rather than just saying social media is going to be big in 2020, which is kind of obvious, right? Because it's already massive. So that's something that, you know, you really need to think about with your content. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean you should start producing hour-long videos and putting them on Facebook. Know your market and know the platform that you're posting to. Again, we referenced this, I think, in the last episode, where we talked about the fact that, you know, posting a massive long video onto YouTube would make sense, right? This podcast episode, for example, we're recording this right now. You can see our lovely faces, and you can go and watch it on YouTube, because it's however long the show ends up being, ideal for YouTube. It is not at all ideal for Facebook or for Instagram. The limit on Instagram is 59 seconds in the feed, and it's 10 minutes in IGTV, Instagram TV. So anything longer than that, we've already been talking way longer than 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So we're already well over that. So this type of content would work, but it would only work on YouTube. Now, it doesn't mean you can't then take clips from it. If I say something insightful, here's hoping. Let's say if I say something insightful, we take that out, we clip it out, and we put that out on social media to drive people to the YouTube video. That would make sense. Or we just simply use it as a piece of standalone content where I say something for 2 minutes, we put that up on Facebook or Instagram or wherever else, and that gets consumed in that channel because that's where those short videos do get consumed. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I do. I do. I also like the way that you're saying people can take their content and slice it and dice it and use it in multiple ways.
Massively. It's such an important skill to be able to have. And again, we use it with our agency. We always insist that the client should be creating their own content And then we can take that content and we can remix it, essentially. It's what we talk about is remixing. And we have a guide on this, by the way, which we can put in the show notes.
The definitive guide,
yeah, exactly.
It's a slicing and dicing.
Well, it's a remixing guide for, maybe we'll rename it to that, but it's a remixing guide for people who want to take one piece of content, like, for example, this video that we're doing right now and this podcast episode, and mixing it up into, you know, different elements, different versions, different formats that will go into different places online. You know, we can take the transcript of this, for example, we can put that out on LinkedIn as a blog post.
It's going to be a very long blog post.
It will, but long blog posts work.
We could slice that up a couple of, we could make it into a few.
We could make it a series. So it could be, for example, a series on the top trends, you know, the top five trends that we're going to talk about in marketing in 2020. And here's, you know, part one. So this would be part three. So I'm glad you're keeping up. So that's it. We could keep track of all of those. Yeah, you are listening. Good. Maybe you're the only one who is. Who knows? Maybe everyone else is just driving and just letting me drone on in the background. But yeah, that's something which, you know, it making less noise, but when you do make noise, make it mean something.
Because people have had enough of the noise, haven't they? It's like there's so many emails, there's so much drivel on social media.
Yeah.
There's just so much crap out there.
And lovely use of the word drivel. Yeah, yeah, it's true.
And I think it's, you know, less quantity, more quality. And that's kind of what you're saying, you know, what you're saying about going really deep, isn't it? And creating great content. So potentially rather than knocking out loads of blog posts, going back to blog posts you've written and going deeper on the topic and adding more content.
So it's so funny you should say that, because I've been doing some SEO work with a client recently, and that's a massively important, it's quite an advanced thing to do, because people don't know that it's a thing
you can do.
Are pretty advanced, Demi. This is why we get on, is the fact that you come up with this stuff and then I say it and make it sound like I said it and I look good as a result. The thing is with the SEO, if you go back and update posts that are, maybe you wrote it as like a piece of what's known as pillar content. So it was quite a long post originally, and it was about one particular topic. If you go back and update that post once every 6 months or once every 3 months, or whenever there's an update to that industry, that piece is way more likely to rank in Google than a piece that was written 5 years ago that has never been updated. So that's a really bright thing to do, is to not necessarily think about how do I write a piece of content every week for the next, you know, 12 months of 2020? Because it may not necessarily be that thing that gives you the edge. It could be that you've already got people visiting one particular post on your site, which if you updated it, you get usually a little bump in the number of visitors and a bump in rankings the moment you update it, when it sort of filters through to the search engines in the following few weeks. But you can also then go back to it again and again. And every time you update it, it becomes more valuable in the search engine's eyes as, like I said, a complete guide. Those complete guides may start out as 2,000-4,000 words. Some of them now are like 10,000 words because they've had stuff added to them over time. And they become the go-to place which people want to share. They want to reference it. They want to see you as the expert, because you're clearly showing you are the expert in those spaces. There are blogs like, there's a guy called Derek Halpern who created a blog called Social Triggers. He only posted, I think, maybe once a month for the first 12 or 18 months. So he didn't write very many posts at all.
Right.
And yet, because his stuff was so different and because it had so much value to it, and it was something that most people weren't doing, which was looking at marketing from a point of view of an academic perspective and looking at all the academic studies and then translating them for his audience and showing them how that means you should be doing this in your marketing now. And looking at really clever, like psychological studies, not just marketing studies, but new kind of human psychology stuff that had been discovered or whatever else. By referencing those and bringing those into a marketing world, he was the only one in his market doing it and was able to create content that was really in-depth, really long-form content, referencing all these different educational
resources,
yeah. And as a result, getting really good rankings because, you know, he was doing something different within his market. He's still a marketer. He's still teaching marketing just like you and me are, but it's a different way to get there. If you can do those sorts of posts, then you're way ahead of the curve.
Great. So quality content.
Yeah, over quantity. And that's true on all your social media as well as on your blog or wherever else you happen to be posting.
So people shouldn't just be, you know, you often hear people say, oh, you should be posting X many times a day or a week. And actually, that's not really relevant if you're unless you've got quality content that you
if you're
be
producing
posting.
Crap, then yeah, pointless. Like, it's if you're just
going to annoy people.
Yeah, if it's another quote, like if you're like, you know, posting another Jay Shetty quote, which obviously isn't a Jay Shetty quote, it's usually something from someone else. I'm not going to go into that whole controversy, but you might have seen that recently. But essentially, if you're taking quotes from other people and either passing them off as your own, or you are putting them out and actually quoting the person. Like, if I see another Maya Angelou quote from a business, I'm going to scream, because Maya Angelou was an incredible woman, right? An amazing poet, incredible activist, unbelievable, right? And I'm sure she had a lot of great things to say. I could give such little care for what she had to say when it comes to your business, because she didn't say anything about your business. You're just using that quote in order to make yourself look like you're producing content.
I won't use any quotes from now on. I don't think I ever have, but I definitely won't now.
But you can. But the point is, quote people who are on your podcast, because that's content only you have.
Yeah. I can quote you.
Yeah, of course you can, all day long. And not all day long, it'd be quite boring. And I'd probably end up saying something quite disinteresting ultimately, like I'm hungry. But yeah, don't quote me all day long. But there are certain things that I'll have said in this episode which will make little sound bites that you can use.
Yeah.
You know, quote me from this podcast. Quote people who matter to your business, who've made a difference to your business.
Unique. It's got to be unique, hasn't
it? Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I remember the first thing I learned, I did a blogging course like 15 years ago. Yeah, no, 10 years ago. And I think she said unique, regular and relevant. That's, you know, and no one wants to keep reading rehashed stuff, do they? They just want to read stuff that's new that they haven't heard before.
Yeah, or from a different perspective, or from, and again, that's why your voice as a writer is so important. It's like, so I've been doing stand-up comedy recently. I know you probably couldn't tell from this episode, but I've started doing stand-up. And one of the things that is really difficult to do, but when you get it, you really get it, is finding your voice as a comedian, or your voice as a writer, or your voice as whatever creative thing you might be doing in your life.
That's trying to find my voice as a podcaster.
Right, exactly. I think you're doing a great job. But like, it's something that doesn't come easily. And the more episodes you do, the better at it you'll get. I used to be a professional magician. There you go. It's a weird little fact for everyone. But I used to be a professional magician. I didn't get good at doing that and kind of find my personality as a performer until I'd done a ton of gigs. And I started when I was 16. So by the time I was like 19 or 20, I was actually pretty solid in terms of what I had and how I was developing it. But it's because I spent 4 years drilling it. Like, while I was studying and while I was at university, I was still performing, getting paid for gigs. I was doing it and doing it and doing it. And that's what makes you good at those things. So, and it stuns
me. Practice makes perfect.
Yeah, exactly. It's that, I mean, it's a slight fallacy in the 10,000 hours rule, but people reference 10,000 hours as being the amount of time that you should spend to do something. It's from a Malcolm Gladwell book called Outliers. But, you know, that's something which you can only get good at if you produce content. If you write a really long form piece of content, it'll take you the same amount of time as those 12 fairly basic posts that you're going to write anyway, but it will all be condensed into one piece. And suddenly it becomes the go-to reference for that thing in your market. You know, if you're, even if you're like a hairdresser, or if you're, you know, someone who doesn't kind of think of themselves as a marketer, you are a marketer. Write me a piece. And I realize the irony of saying this as a bald man, but the fact is that, you know, if you're a hairdresser, tell me in depth about why I should be caring for my hair. Too late for me, but why I should be caring. My eyebrows I could care for. There you go. How to sculpt your eyebrows beautifully and make sure that you kind of, you know, keep the luster in them. There you go. I'd read that article because that's all I've got left. So the fact is that you could write, I mean, it was true though, that if you wrote a piece like that, you know, it's going to be very in-depth, very niche, very specific. And if you write and tell me all that you know about it in that piece, it will become a go-to reference.
And the ROI on that is going to massively exceed anything
of course.
Else.
Yeah, of course.
So I know you like to do very long podcast episodes, but
do you want me to shut up now? Is this a nice way of saying shut up?
I don't lose all my listeners. Have we got time? I think we've got time for another.
So I don't lose all my listeners. Is that what you just said?
I just said now at this point. I think we must talk. No, but the thing is, you and I could talk for ages about all these things. We get carried away. But I just, have we got time for one more trend?
We have. I tell you what.
You wanted to do five, didn't you? We've only done three.
You're just bracing yourself for another hour of no. I tell you what, I'll do the next two and I'll do it in 5 minutes. I've got a clock in front of me and I'll do it in five minutes.
This is a challenge to you. Two trends, to 2020.
You're being quite rude to me now, Emmy Faust. Taking the piss out of me for talking to you.
I know, I shouldn't as well, because it's so kind of you to come on my podcast. But
I know. I know, giving up my time. And what do I get? Abuse. So the fact that we're leaving all this in, by the way, this is all part of the episode. We're
not going to edit any of this out. Because we have fun, don't we? That's the whole point. Business growth should be fun. That's
You're cutting into my 5 minutes. Right, let's get on with it. That's only 4 minutes now. Right, the voice search is a big thing, okay? So when it comes to voice search, that is a big trend right now because everyone has these devices in their house. Well, large amounts of people have them. I don't. I'm terrified of them. No, I don't. For those of you who missed that, you might not have heard it on the audio, but on the video, you will have seen Emmy's excellent face, which looked as terrified as mine did. I haven't got one either.
I don't like them, no.
Because they're freaky. They're really freaky.
It's like a robot in your house that you shout at.
Do you know what it reminds me of? Is the robot from, I think it was called HAL from 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Right,
a Stanley Kubrick film, and it's essentially the robot. Spoiler alert: the robot turns against the crew in a spaceship in the middle of space. They've got no other way to get out or to go anywhere, and the robot starts to run the show. And one of the astronauts is called Dave, and there's a kind of infamous moment of, "I'm sorry, Dave, I can't do that," and it's suddenly, "Oh, this is horrible. We're now locked in and he's going to kill us all." It's that, and I feel like that about those devices. Anyway, the fact is, those devices are being constantly asked questions, information searches usually, and the information that they get doesn't come from inside their own little robotic metallic heads. It comes from Google. They're looking online and searching for that particular thing. All they're essentially doing is providing an interface for you not to have to lift up your phone and type things into Google. It just does it for you automatically and comes back with the result in a nice, you know, slightly patronizing voice that they have. So,
is it mainly questions that people are asking? Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
So you want to be answering the questions.
Precisely. And so the idea is, and this comes on to actually the other point, so it does tie in, is that you want to be writing kind of succinct answers to questions. Now, I understand that based on that, you might be thinking, hang on, doesn't that completely contradict what you just said with the long form stuff? Were you going to say that?
I
should have let you say it then. But again, I've only got 2 minutes left. So the thing is with that you actually should be writing relatively short sentences in your pieces that answer questions. Doesn't mean you can't still write a really long form ultimate guide to type piece of content, because it could be that that ultimate guide piece of content would be ideal for a number of questions because it answers a number of questions within the copy. So if it's 1,000 or 2,000 or 5,000 words long, it's going to answer way more questions than a tiny little blog post. So actually, it's just making sure that you have concise answers to questions that can then be drawn from Google to answer those things, because Alexa isn't going to read out a 1,000-word blog post.
Do you need to have the almost like as a sort of subtitle, like the question and then the answer underneath? Would that help if it's like, I don't know, why should I have a marketing plan? And then underneath you write the answer.
Look at these ninja skills that Emmy brings to the table. That's exactly right, yeah.
Is that what you should do? Yeah, I'm asking for the listener because...
No, but you're right. You're absolutely right. That's exactly it. Because for example, if you create H tags, they're called headline tags. So H tags in your content, usually subheadings are an H2 or an H3. If you create lots of H2 tags to break up the text, which you should be doing anyway, because it's good for search engine optimization, and you include your keywords in there, like, for example, the answer to your particular question that you're helping to solve. So how do you run Facebook ads, or what are Facebook ads? If I wrote what are Facebook ads as my H2 tag and then wrote a really succinct answer to that, and then someone on Alexa searches for it, I'm going to have provided the best quality content answer to that question. Now, that brings me on to my other point. I'm going to shoehorn this other one in, this other kind of trend of what's coming up. Voice is going to get bigger. Within that, there are a thing called snippets. About 49% of all searches done on Google result in what's called a no click. So it means that people search for the thing and then they don't click on any of the results. Why? Because they already have the data inside Google. Google's being a bit cheeky, and it's taking the information from your site, just like it does with Alexa or with any of the other types of tools, you know, those Echoes or whatever else they're called, all those tools. It's taking a snippet from a website, putting that snippet front and center, so that when you search for that thing, the result is there on the search results page and not on a website somewhere where I've got to go and dig for it. They're making it easier and easier for the user. But if you're writing information pieces, you are getting screwed out of traffic, because you could write the best possible piece, which does all the stuff I've talked about already, which fits into the snippet perfectly and answers that question and also works for voice search. You could do all of that right and you will get no traffic from it whatsoever, because Google just took that answer and put it out front and center. And unfortunately, due to the terms and conditions, they can do that all day long. So what do you do instead? You write pieces. I've gone over 5 minutes, but only just. I'm going to finish now. Which is that you write pieces that are from a more personal perspective. Okay, so although you should also be answering those questions of what are Facebook ads, for example, which is a more generic question, you should also be writing it from your specific perspective, so that those pieces that people want to read on your website are kind of go-to pieces, because they get your voice, because they get to hear your expertise, they get to hear your background. That's one thing the search results will never be able to provide, is your voice and your experience and your expertise. And Emmy, you bring stuff to the table that I will never be able to bring to the table. I'm not going on Dragon's Den anytime soon, but you've done it, smashed it, got the investment and carried on and built successful businesses, et cetera, et cetera. You've done all of that stuff. And that's something which I've not done, and so therefore I haven't got that voice. You have, and you can use that. So write those pieces of content to be as so you're kind of trying to avoid snippets in one way and trying to get into them in the other. Get into them with answers to standard questions, but then write longer form pieces that talk much more about
it.
Yeah, to complement it, about your experience, that really goes into much more detail. I'm done. That's the end of the podcast. Thanks very much for listening. No, I'm joking.
Don't run away.
I'm not.
That was amazing. Five. Let me just see if I can remember them off the top of my head. We've got snippets. We've got quality content over quantity. We've got...
You looked at notes then. I caught you looking to the side. You looked at notes.
Okay, you busted me.
Busted.
I probably could have remembered it. The Economist review about social media and data. It's all about the data.
Yes.
So we will link some of those in the show notes. Thank you so much, Matt, for coming on the podcast for the second time.
Such a pleasure.
And also for keeping within your time schedule.
Well, only in the last 5 minutes. Let's not kid ourselves.
And maybe there will be a hat trick and we'll get you on again.
Cool. Well, not based on the comments on this episode. Not listeners' comments, yours. So, yeah, make sure you guys like and subscribe to this as well, because obviously that all helps, Emmy, because this is such a good little podcast, not just because I've been on it twice, obviously, but because Emmy's really knows her stuff. And I think some of the episodes where you're talking about your experiences, I think those are really, really insightful as well. So
I'm going to do that.
Yeah, so go ahead and go and like and subscribe and do all that other good shizzle.
Thanks again, Matt.
Pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much for listening to the Business Greenhouse podcast. You can get all the show notes from my website, which is emmyfaust.com. Do please leave me a review on iTunes if you enjoyed it. And I always love to hear from you, so you can tweet me at Emmy Faust and let me know your thoughts on this episode or anything you'd particularly like to hear about in future episodes. Looking forward to catching up again next week.